The AI Today podcast, produced by Cognilytica, cuts through the hype and noise to identify what is really happening now in the world of artificial intelligence. Learn about emerging AI trends, technologies, and use cases from Cognilytica analysts and guest experts.
Hello, and welcome to the AI Today podcast. I'm your host, Kathleen Mulch.
And I'm your host, Ron Schmelzer. And I have been recording a bunch of fantastic interviews that we have been doing as part of South by Southwest 2024. We were at the conference and so much is happening. AI is the topic of pretty much every conversation, even though it's not South by AI or South by Southwest AI. It really is the topic of every conversation because of how transformative the nature of AI is. It's almost as if we were, say, in the 90s and we were talking about the internet, right? Every conversation would have been about the internet back then, or perhaps in the early 2000s about mobile. Here we are at another transformative moment in technology, and its broad application to so many industries, pretty much every industry, right? And it's hard not to have these conversations with folks who are there and presenting and sharing their insights because we know that we're at this moment in history where things are going to change. The way that we do our various tasks, every industry, just the nature of our ecosystem. So as part of that, we've been interviewing some real thought leaders who have been sharing their expertise at the conference and as well in conjunction with that. And of course, this podcast series, our activation that we have done here with AI Today, we were invited to podcast at AI Today, is in sponsorship by Intel. And you'll hear a little bit more from them later. But I wanted to really sort of bring us into this conversation and engage you in some of the sorts of insightful conversations we've been having at South by Southwest.
Exactly. You know, we talk a lot on the podcast about how AI is impacting just about every single industry, and it really is. And we got to meet folks from many different industries. And as Ron mentioned, AI really was that common theme and common topic of conversation. So for today's podcast, we're so excited to have with us Dr. Jag Singh, who is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, focusing on the application of AI in the practice of medicine. And he's also a practicing cardiologist at Mass General Brigham, also called MGB. So welcome and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, Ron. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to today's conversation. AI and healthcare was a big theme at South by Southwest, so I'm excited for this discussion. We'd like to start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about your background and now your current roles at both Harvard Medical School and also MGB.
Thanks, Kathleen. So I am what they call a cardiac electrophysiologist, or somebody would call it better as an electrician of the heart. I deal with heart rhythm disturbances. People who die suddenly have rhythm disturbances like atrial fibrillation, ventricular fibrillation. I implant devices in patients' hearts that are connected to their hearts with wires, such as pacemakers, defibrillators. And I also thread catheters into their hearts and burn the circuits and freeze the circuits that cause rhythm disturbances. So that's what I am as an electrophysiologist. I'm also the former clinical chief of cardiology at Mass General Hospital. And to give you a little bit of my background, I grew up in India. I initially trained in India, subsequently went on a scholarship to Oxford, where I did my doctorate, then landed up at the Framingham Heart Study at in Boston, in Framingham, actually, in Massachusetts. And subsequently made my way into Mass General Hospital, did my entire training as a cardiologist and cardiac electrophysiologist there, and also did a master's at MIT in clinical investigation at the same time. I here, you know, practice clinical medicine, do a fair amount of research, and also participate in educational endeavors. And most recently, I wrote this book called Future Care, Sensors, AI, and the Reinvention of Medicine, which is why I was at South by Southwest giving a lecture. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is really a fantastic area. And I think, you know, as, you know, medicine continues to evolve and technology continues to evolve, it's an interesting area where one reinforces the other, right? We just discover ways of treating ailments and we use technology for that, which is kind of a interesting area of place to be. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how you see AI sort of impacting the space of practicing medicine, and of course, even the areas of, say, personalized healthcare, where maybe we can differentiate in the way that different patients and different people get different treatments, even using the same technologies.
For sure, for sure. You know, I'd like to, if it's okay with you, take a step back and really kind of lay the ground for why, you know, AI is so important. And I think part of it is because healthcare, as we understand it, Ron and Kathleen, is pretty much non-sustainable the way it is, right? I think it's what we call as big, fat, and sick. And it requires resuscitation, if I may say so again. And I think a part of that problem is because we're non-transparent, we're very opaque. In the way how we reimburse healthcare, in the way how we practice healthcare. And just to give you an example, you know, 20% of our GDP in the US, which is about $4 trillion, goes towards healthcare, and we're still indefensible on most of the care quality metrics. And I think those care quality metrics are relevant to the question you asked from the AI perspective, and I'll circle back to that. But I think also we're a living contradiction here in the US, right? I mean, and I say that because $3 or $4 are spent in looking after patients with chronic diseases. But over and above and beyond that, the wellness of our institutions is dependent on the sickness of our patients. And I think that is where AI can kind of help us flip that conversation, because now with, you know, I would say unlimited connectivity and ubiquitous data and massive processing power, we are uniquely poised now to actually transform the way we deliver care. And that's where I think AI becomes a big part of it. Now, if I were to give you the balcony view of how care would look in the future, AI is a part of it. I think the future of care is largely going to be virtual, with sensors, with AI, in sustainable workflows that will translate into better outcomes. Coming specifically to your question on personalized AI, I think, you know, that depends on how you look at AI. And I think very broadly, if I may categorize it, I think I look at it specifically as analytic AI, which is conventional AI, and generative AI, because that's the newer trends of how we're actually looking after patients and looking after even physicians. And I think we'll discuss that in greater detail. But to specifically answer your question, I think the role AI has in predicting disease, you know, whether it's cancer or heart disease or any other disease state, helping us in diagnosing disease, helping us in prognosticating disease. But most importantly, I think the only way that healthcare can become sustainable is how do we introduce self-management strategies where patients can have more skin in the game. And I think that's where AI will empower patients to play a role also in managing their own diseases, or what I call as MYOD, manage your own disease. I think those are, you know, really important changes that will happen in medicine. And to illustrate this with examples, I'll use a very simple example first, Ron, and we can get into more complex disease states later on, is diabetes. You know, you have diabetes, you have a sensor that can measure blood glucose level that is connected to your insulin pump that, using AI-based approaches, can adjust your insulin dose. So there are feedback loops using AI and sensor-based approaches already in small situations, in single disease states, being put into play. But you can only imagine that as we talk about complex diseases, this is going to have a significant way in actually impacting personalized care.
Yeah, we talk a lot about this idea of hyper-personalization, which is one of the seven patterns of AI. And how is this going to impact treatment for individuals, right? No longer do you need to be bucketed into groups and categories, and maybe what works for people that generally, you know, have the same characteristics as you may not work for you. So we're really looking forward to seeing where this goes. And I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of take off on that, because there's a really good example of that. And that's the complex disease we were just talking about, Rama, is heart failure. You know, so heart failure can occur because of a variety of reasons where the pump action of the heart diminishes over time. There are multiple etiologies, but the way we treat them You know, let's presume patients with heart failure are at risk for having sudden death. So we use a cutoff looking at their heart function and say, if your heart function is above 35% or less than 35%, we're going to decide if you need a defibrillator implanted or not. That's just to give you a broader example. Now, when you use unconventional risk categorization using newer AI approaches, such as machine learning approaches, you actually separate these patients out into different clusters that show which are really highly predisposed for sudden death versus those that you had categorized earlier based on the heart function are really not at risk for sudden death. So I think that's where the hyper-personalization and the clustering strategies are going to evolve beyond just the dichotomy of categorizing patients right now with yeses and nos. So I think that's going to change. And Kathleen, I think also that as we evolve in looking after the individual patients, it is the continuous data that we monitor on these patients that will allow us to look after those patients in a very personalized way, where we use the data from that own individual to help us decide when that patient is falling sick. And I can give you many examples on this, but that's the hyper-personalization, I think, where medicine is eventually going towards.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I know a lot of people also are increasingly using wearable devices and, you know, sensors, that's all changing. And I know that you talked about this at your South by Southwest talk, but maybe for our listeners that didn't get a chance to listen to it, you can explain this more deeply about how you think virtual care and also the role of sensors and other AI technologies as well will really impact that care for patients, especially in the years ahead. And we love examples. So if you have some, please share.
For sure, for sure. So let's kind of go in a linear order of virtual care, because that's easily available. I think all of us experienced it during COVID as we tried to stay away from the hospitals, but still get the care we needed to get. So telehealth or virtual care, you know, I think now is a common terminology, but again, an umbrella terminology. And I think the pendulum, unfortunately, has swung back a little bit because of regulatory issues. And now, you know, out-of-state virtual care, where you actually need to do out-of-state virtual care in rural areas, are not that easily amenable and or reimbursable. But I think that's the future for sure. And I think much of that is going to come back because patients are going to expect them. It's going to be a part of their expectations. And I think patient expectations are going to trump regulatory issues in the near future, because also that's the only way you can eventually access care. And if we're talking about all the social determinants of health and the inequity of care, virtual care is probably the first step in actually giving patients access. And also at the same time, if I may use this word, declutter the busy outpatient areas of large academic and tertiary centers, where a lot of these things can be done virtually. Now, so that's the first part, but I think virtual care or a video-based care visit is actually probably just a highly glorified, sophisticated phone call where you're actually seeing the patient. And that's where you need sensors. You need sensors to provide us objective data as if you're actually interacting or interfacing with the patient in the clinic room, where you have objective data to make that assessment. And that's where I think sensors really make an important part of the clinical practice. And when we talk about sensors, you know, there is a spectrum of sensors, as you said, Kathleen. There are implantable sensors and there are wearable sensors. Implantable sensors are sensors that are part of the devices that I just briefly talked about at the start of the session. But over and above and beyond that, there are wearable sensors now, whether they're watches, whether they're necklaces, whether they're rings, whether they're tattoo sensors. We know that tattoo sensors now can change color depending on the blood glucose level and the pH in the body. There are ambient sensors, sensors on the walls that can check our gait, our stability. There are sensors on the toilet seats now that can actually measure your weight, record your ECG, and study your microbiome. So really provide you with objective evidence that is oftentimes missing in a routine clinical visit, but at the same time, I think really allow for individualized care. And I think the sensing, I think it's important for folks to also, the listeners, to understand that the word sensor comes from our senses, you know, whether it's sight, hearing, taste, touch, all those things that we consider as analog experiences, but actually they're all electrical charges. They're all digital experiences. And every sense can be actually broken down into binary codes. And similarly, every organ system in the body now will have and is having organ-specific sensors that really create this, a similar situation like the automobile check engine light. So if you have organ-specific sensors, now you can have a digital dashboard of the human body for every individual. This is the hyper-personalization we were talking about that can give us a check engine light situation suggesting that, hey, something is out of whack with one of the body organs and we need to proactively intervene. And I think that's where medicine is eventually going, is through virtual care and through sensor-aided technology.
Yeah, I think that's really very interesting because, there are some things that you don't necessarily need a sensor to be aware of, like, you break an arm or have some very acute injury. And there's some things that cancers where, you don't know about them until pretty much it's too late. And, people have been talking about things like, having routine CT scans, which people don't like that idea, but it would be kind of interesting to have these sensors and the check warning light to give people those, early notifications of things like that, which, pretty scary when you think about, these things that may be sitting there dormant and you're not even aware of it. Or maybe have genetic predispositions, which make some people aware of it, but some things just come out of nowhere. So that's really very interesting. And I think the use of sensor technology and the use of data, of course, is all data driven, right? That's what sensors are doing, just providing that input. We know that that's the fuel that makes AI work. And also part of the reason why, even companies like Intel have really put so much thought into it. Obviously, there's a race to, have the infrastructure to support all these AI demands. But also there are a lot of very diverse cases here where it's not just generating images and generating text on a big server using a GPU. There's lots of, edge applications of AI, more discrete. And that's actually why Intel is such a big fan and supporter, of course, of AI, like everybody is, and supporting it. And even in their sponsorship of this series, and one of the things I want to share with our listeners here is that, this podcast, which is sponsored by Intel, as they say, is the spark for the dreamers who do, and they dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, and more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. And Intel is the spark to start something new and to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel, and you can learn more at intel.com/starts. But I think this idea here of all of these fundamental ways, things that we are doing in our daily lives, whether it's education, whether it's finance, whether it's health, is being impacted by AI. And so maybe let's talk a little bit about where you see the most likely applications for AI in healthcare in the short term, right? And also maybe where kind of you think it'll inevitably will be a core component in the longer term. And maybe to some extent, some of the critical success factors, what do you think are going to be those factors that may say yes or no to AI's long-term ability to provide value here.
For sure. Can I just talk about what you said about Intel? I think it resonated so well.
Yeah, please do.
About the dreamers and not wanting to have disease and prevent disease. I think that's the essence of our conversation out here. Is how can you use sensors and AI to predict and prevent disease, and if needed, proactively intervene? So when I look at healthcare, I look at it as a pyramid. And at the top of the pyramid is subspecialty and complicated care, which I call upstream care. Then I have this midstream care component, which is chronic diseases. And the mainstream care, which we're talking about, is wellness. So when patients become unwell, which is the big mainstream component, they develop chronic diseases, and those chronic diseases then have complications that requires upstream specialty care. So if we can use sensor-based approaches and AI-based approaches to work at the wellness layer, we can prevent chronic disease and reduce the need for upstream care, right? That's the basic essence of this whole integration of sensor-based approaches along with AI to provide continuous surveillance so we can predict and prevent disease. Now, coming back to, I thought it was pretty cool what the main mission of Intel is out here, because it aligns with exactly what we're talking. Now, in terms of your question, in terms of AI, what are the short-term aspects and what are the probably intermediate and what are the long-term impact of AI in healthcare? So if I look at the big problems in healthcare right now, I think the big ones are patient experience and physician burnout, right? How can we fix that? And I think that's where generative AI is going to really help fix it, because we already have at Mass General Brigham AI chatbots now that we're experimenting with that can respond in a very empathetic way to patient queries regarding their data or certain questions, and it can construct an approach that relieves the burden on the clinicians to actually have to just edit it finally, but not have to draft an empathetic note to the patient because of time constraints. The second place, I think, which again we're doing at Mass General Brigham, is have these ambient note technologies where you actually walk into the clinic, you talk to the patient, and boom, your electronic medical record has a note that is generated from your conversation, which is like a proper clinic note. And this is something we're already experimenting with, and I think is going to really reduce the burnout and reduce the burden on clinicians by what we call as this famous phenomenon of liberation from keyboards, but at the same time, unchaining us from the mundane activities like, you know, prescription writing and pre-authorizations and things to that effect. So those are immediate short-term generative AI impact. I think there's already an impact of conventional AI in places like pathology and radiology. As we talked about, you know, computer vision and machine eyes, the machine sees a lot of things better than human eyes can, and actually helps categorize risk and classify risk better than we can. And I think that's a place which is a low-hanging fruit, and already we have AI-based strategies that are becoming a part, or we call the conventional AI-based strategies, becoming a part of clinical practice. There are single disease states, we already touched on that, such as diabetes or chronic obstructive lung disease, you know, where you have a sensor and you have an AI-based approach, an algorithm to manage those patients. Those are, again, low-hanging fruits that I think eventually will become a part of how we actually manage these patients. I think in the long term, it's what we talked about already is, you know, how can you continue to aggregate continuous data? How can you put AI logic into it to provide that N of one care that we talked about, which is hyper-personalized? But most importantly, I think this is where where we're all going towards is how can you enhance the level of digital equity and thereby health equity, and thereby global health equity, is really kind of democratize education, democratize research, and the delivery of care all across the world. And I think if there's anything that can do it, it's this whole burgeoning digital metamorphosis, this whole sensor AI, union of providing care.
Yeah, these have been great insights and such a wonderful conversation. We always like to ask our guests the same final question because you're able to bring in your own unique experiences and answer it in your own unique way, which is why we love, you know, no matter how many times we ask this question, we always get such different approaches. So as a final note, what do you believe the future of AI is in general and its application to organizations and beyond?
So I think, you know, AI in general, I think we touched upon a lot of things of how it's going to impact medicine. I think it's certainly going to democratize education, research, and really potentially allow organizations to not just look after patients in their local, regional areas, but across borders. I think the future of AI for organizations is this era of networkness, which is kind of an open era without borders, where a patient can see anyone, anywhere, anytime. And using generative AI along with sensor-based strategies, I could provide care to a patient in Thailand at any point in time, just, you know, with the different strategies that we have. I think this transformation of healthcare organizations, along with the use of digital twins and with the use of metaverse, I think there's a lot of exciting stuff waiting for us around the corner. We just need to implement it correctly.
Yeah. So Ron and I are interactive awards judges at South by Southwest. And this year we got to go to the final awards judging in person, which was wonderful. And we get different categories. And so one of the categories I was judging was the student innovation category. And some of the folks there had this device that when you have something on your skin, you know, you need a biopsy. When you're in countries that don't have a lot of resources and a lot of doctors that can do this, you can be delayed very far. And sometimes this is, you know, quite important to get it done soon. So they're able to take it and put it on, like, instead of shipping that biohazard material, they said that's, you know, very hard to do and gets caught up in customs and can take some time. It went into like a QR code, and then it went into this special machine, and you were able to look at it immediately so that all you needed was access to the printer. You could print it out and then look at this, which really now is taking away borders from medicine, where doctors Absolutely. In the United States can look at it. And so it's interesting. And that's just one application of where this is going.
Absolutely. I think this is the future. I think being able to give care wherever the patients are, using technology. But I think one of the things of caution out here, obviously, Kathleen, is creating the right data sets that are generalizable, so that the AI algorithms are usable in different areas of the world, and also creating the right sensor strategies that are not immersed in inequity and bias. That means we're testing it in all different skin colors, so that the data from that, then again, is generalizable across the world and across borders.
Well, I think this is fantastic. I think that's part of, as mentioned, part of what AI, the positive vision of AI, is this positive transformative value to really deliver a lot of this stuff that, you know, we need value for, whether it's healthcare, whether it's finance, whether it's education, whether it's in our economy, all these areas. That's why we have these conversations and look at it, because there are a lot of ways that AI can transform both positively and negatively. Sometimes the negative stories capture the attention, and we don't realize, without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, as it were, that there are some major positive transformations here, whether it's improving the quality of care, improving access to care, improving the ability to detect and treat things earlier and get ahead of the cycle, go to wellness, move up the chain. That's what this is all about. So this is why we have conversations with folks like you. We really enjoy you're in there every day looking at this particular area. You're there and do it with the research, with the patients, with the technology. So I think that's what makes this so helpful. So I want to thank you so much, Jack, for being here on the AI Today podcast and sharing your insights with our audience.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been such a wonderful discussion. And we'll definitely link in the show notes your book, the copy of that, so our listeners can click on that if they're interested. And we also will link to our CPMAI, the Cognitive Project Management for AI methodology, if you're interested in learning how to run and manage AI projects. We're big advocates of that. And for our listeners, we have our free Intro to CPMAI course as well. We'll also link to our free Trustworthy AI course and our AI Trustworthy AI certification as well. We love to hear from our listeners. Please reach out. As always, we'd love to hear what topics really resonate with you. You know, what you'd like to hear more of, and make sure to subscribe to AI Today if you haven't done so already. In addition to this wonderful interview, we have a few more lined up as well. Like this episode and want to hear more? With hundreds of episodes and over 3 million downloads, check out more AI Today podcasts at aitoday.live. Make sure to subscribe to AI Today if you haven't already on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Amazon, or your favorite podcast platform. Want to dive deeper and get resources to drive your AI efforts further? We've put together a carefully curated collection of resources and tools handcrafted for you, our listeners, to expand your knowledge, dive deeper into the world of AI, and provide you with the essential resources you need. Check it out at aitoday.live/list. This sound recording and its contents are copyright by Cognilytica, all rights reserved. Music by Matsu Gravas. As always, thanks for listening to AI Today, and we'll catch you at the next podcast.